So this week we come to the fourth of the series of talks outlining the method of doing metta meditation. And in the first week we looked at the practice of mindful awareness, having a mind of equanimity and clear watching of whatever was happening in the mind and the body. In the second week we looked at how to evoke and develop the feeling of metta, how to try to get in touch with that experience, and how to begin to use that as the basis for developing samadhi. And in the third talk I talked about how to then develop and spread that further, make it to fulfill that feeling, and so we could reach the fulfillment of the first stage of metta meditation. So just to briefly recap on how to fulfill that first stage, first thing is to have the words that we're using as a meditation phrase to craft and sustain that in a careful way. Then, secondly, we reflect on and bring into our minds the meaning of those words. And when the meaning of those words is clear, the words keep going, and then we try and look for the feeling of metta and try to evoke the emotional response of metta and hold that in the mind. Once we've managed to get that feeling going and hold and sustain that in the mind, reasonably steadily, we then try to spread that around our body, and so moving the mind around the body until we can feel that in each different part of the body. It's like the fourth step. And then the fifth step is to maintain a clear, full bodily awareness of the whole body while sitting in meditation, developing metta for oneself. So these are like five like sub-steps or sub-stages within the first stage of loving kindness. And if we can do that, then we can pat ourselves on the back and congratulate ourselves for having completed the first stage of metta. And if you want to come and see me, I'll tell you you're a very good meditator. I'll even print out a little certificate for you from the computer if you want. You can stick it on the wall. That's going to make you feel good because it's a very beautiful thing. Not something to be disparaged or looked down on. And if you can do that, so you have the feeling of loving kindness for yourself, sustained even through your whole body, clear, full body awareness of that feeling, and keeping reasonably constant but getting deeper and deeper for 20 to 30 minutes. And then this is what we call the kamika samadhi, and the state of concentration at that time we describe as kamika samadhi, or momentary concentration. And the perception of metta that we feel at that time we describe as the ugaha nimitta, the preliminary or learning sign. It literally means like the taking up sign for metta. And so our job from here is to then keep on developing that and deepening it. If we can take the meditation to this stage, then we've really overcome the coarse levels of defilements. Okay, so if you've got like really coarse restlessness and sloth and torpor and anger and all of these kinds of things, then you won't be able to get to this stage and your meditation will be a struggle. Okay? So remember that there's always these two aspects of meditation, and not to be extreme about them. One aspect of meditation is to understand the nature of that struggle. Okay? So that means by engaging in the struggle, you're learning about yourself. Okay? So from that point of view, then it doesn't matter how much you struggle. Okay? Doesn't matter how bad your meditation is, as long as you keep going at it, because you're always learning. So that's one point of view. The other point of view is just get rid of all the crap. Just don't worry your mind with all of the rubbish. Get rid of it and get the mind to a state where it's peaceful and clear. And so from this point of view, we are concerned not merely to struggle with the defilements, but to overcome them. Okay? So these are two different aspects, and they're of course like the aspects of samatha and vipassana. With samatha, we want to overcome defilements. Vipassana, we want to understand defilements. And these are two aspects need to go together. They shouldn't be in extreme. We don't just take one or the other. If we're just intent on overcoming defilements, then we will repress and deny and try to pretend that they don't exist. If we're just concerned to understand the defilements and to try to appreciate them as they occur in our mind, then we will never find the peace and the happiness and the joy that will lead to a deeper level of insight and concentration. So we need to do both of these things, not take them to extremes. So once we've reached this stage, those coarser defilements are already history. And that means that we're very happy. We're very content. We're sitting there in our meditation and the mind kind of clicks along. Clicks into place. It sets into place. And you can feel this kind of unity, this harmony which emerges as the mind is engaging in the proper way with its meditation object. And as that happens, you begin to realize that this is actually what I was supposed to be doing all along. This is actually what the meditation teachers mean when they say, stick with your meditation object. Because before, I thought I was trying to stick with my meditation object, but I wasn't actually sticking with it. And then you remember, oh, my meditation teacher didn't say, try to stick with your meditation object. The meditation teacher said, stick with it. They're two different things. Okay? The sticking with the meditation object is what brings the mind into unity. Following the meditation instructions and bringing that sense of ease and confidence and just doing it. And there's a time when it just comes into place. And that's the time that we're talking about now. It all kind of settles in and it all, oh, okay, this is what I'm about. This is what the meditation is about. And you understand where you're going. So from here, you want to move to developing metta for the second stage for the loved person. Now, there's no one who can tell you when you're ready to do this. Only your own mind can let you know when you're ready. And so all you have to do is when you think you're ready, then give it a go. When you want to try it out, just try it out and stay mindful, watching what happens. While you're actually in the meditation itself, don't be evaluating, okay? Don't be worrying, don't be doubting, don't be judging. Just do. When you come to the end of the meditation, that's the time for you to reflect back and evaluate and judge. And that's when you understand, oh, okay, I was ready for this or I wasn't ready for that. Okay, so this is that little period of reflection which I ask you to do at the end of each meditation. They call pachavekana, it's like reviewing. So that's the time when you're supposed to actively inquire into how your meditation went. And if you've been mindful during the meditation itself, then you'll remember and those things will come to mind. Those things that are important will come to your mind and you'll understand, oh, okay, this is where I went wrong. This is where I tried to go too far. This is where my mind fell into sloth or whatever it may be. So when we think that we feel reasonably confident on this first stage, then we go to the second stage of metta. Now, generally speaking, one should stick with the first stage of metta for a long time. One should get a very, very good, solid grounding and basis in that practice. For myself, I spent about 9 months doing just the first stage of metta before I started doing the second stage. So don't be in a hurry. Don't think this is like, you know, you do one week and then the other the next week. There's no rush. If you rush it, all you'll find out is that by the time you get to the end of it, that it hasn't worked properly. And then you think, oh, there's something wrong with the practice. There's nothing wrong with the practice. You just have to take your time and work at it carefully and systematically. Having said that, the second stage of metta is, of course, often the easiest stage. Okay, and it's not going to hurt or damage your meditation if you try out to do it. Often people find that it's actually easier to develop metta for a loved person than it is for themselves. And so it's not going to cause any great problems by going to the second stage. Each of these stages, as we go through, has its own particular kind of defilement. And that is to say, at each particular stage there are certain tendencies that tend to occur in our mind when they go wrong. Okay? So for the first stage of metta, when you're doing metta for yourself, obviously the what goes wrong or the defilement of that stage is narcissism. It's like a kind of self-loving or selfishness. And so you only care for yourself and you don't care for others. So this is what happens when that first stage is like perverted or twisted. This is what goes wrong with it. And so to overcome that or reflect on that, then we need to go beyond this. And so we develop metta for the other. And then we take this as easily as we can, making our job, you know, as easy as possible, not making it hard for ourselves. And find someone to loved person to develop metta for. Now, who do we choose for our loved person? You want it to be somebody who you have a very clean, simple, pure, uncomplicated sense of love for. This is the most important thing. Perhaps, you know, we might think that it's the depth of our love for that person which is important. But actually that's not really the case. The depth of our love for that individual doesn't really matter too much. And in fact, often when we're in relationships with people, depth in our sense of love for that person comes from struggling and overcoming a lot of difficulties. And this is where the deep sense of love comes from. But that same struggle makes that love complicated. It makes the memories and associations that we connect with that person complicated. And so that's not very useful for developing metta. Okay, so it's more suitable, more useful. Remember, we're trying to make our job as easy for ourselves as we can. Okay, so you don't want to import into your metta meditation all of your emotional issues. Okay, what you're trying to do is develop a bigness of heart within which those emotional issues will dissolve. Okay. So you're not trying to work through issues. That's another job. That's a job you do at another time. It's another kind of way of working with the mind. During metta meditation, you don't work with issues. Okay? During metta meditation, you want to make the mind as clean and clear and simple and childlike as possible. So remember that wonderful simile in the Metta Sutta, just like a mother would love her only child. So this is the kind of emotional response that we want from metta. It's just the love of a mother for her only child. You can imagine that feeling when a mother picks up her newborn baby, holds it in her arms for the first time, and just feel this total sense of pure, innocent love for that child. Okay? So this is what we're trying to do with metta. And so, when you're developing, you know, you want to choose someone you want to do metta for, then avoid choosing somebody you have a complicated relationship with. Avoid somebody you have a love-hate relationship with. Avoid somebody you have a sexual relationship with, or somebody who potentially you might have a sexual relationship with. And you should also avoid somebody who's dead, because when somebody's passed away, then it's quite possible that the feeling of metta will be complicated with grieving and loss. Okay? So, and also when developing metta, meditation, don't avoid developing metta for any animals or non-human beings. Okay? Because you want to, again, you want to make the emotion as simple and clean as we can. And when developing a sense of empathy for other kinds of beings, we have less knowledge and understanding about how they feel. And so our ability to relate to them is not as strong as it is for other humans. We relate to other humans more closely. We understand them better. Okay, so that's probably excluded quite a lot of possibilities from your sphere of who to do metta for. Okay, so suitable people to do metta for are people like your mother or father, if you have a good, simple, honest relationship with them, or similarly a brother or sister or son or daughter, grandparents or grandchildren, if that's the case, if that's relevant, are also very good. Otherwise, somebody who's a good friend, or a teacher, a companion in the Dhamma. All of these kinds of people are people who are suitable for developing metta for. Okay, somebody who you don't want to get anything out of. Somebody who you can love just very simply for themselves. Okay, so when you start, if you think that you're ready to do metta for the second person. So if your meditation's been going well enough that you think that you can complete the first stage and develop metta for the second person, then you need to choose somebody to fit into that role before the meditation starts. Okay? You don't want to get into the meditation and then be going along, you know, finish your first stage and then think, yeah, this is going pretty good, I think I'll give the second stage a go now. Who shall I do metta for the second person? And then think, oh, should it be this one? Oh, no, hang on, that doesn't quite work. And so on and so forth, yeah? So this will, then your meditation's gone. You have to choose your person beforehand, okay? You should only choose one person in the loved ones. You shouldn't choose more than one. But you can choose different people in different meditations if you want to. However, it's not necessarily a good idea to swap them around too much, because then that can again can cause confusion and doubting. You sort of get there and then you think, hang on, which one was it today I was supposed to be doing metta for? So don't worry about having to do metta for everybody in the world, alright? You're worrying about developing your heart. The metta for everyone in the world will come naturally, it will flow naturally, okay? Don't worry about that. And don't worry about, is that person going to get my metta? Okay? Again, it's not your concern. Okay? It doesn't matter. Alright? If you develop metta properly, one, you can be guaranteed that everybody who you meet with will get your metta in one way or another. Okay? And that they'll all benefit from that. You don't have to worry about kind of sending some special mystical field of metta around the galaxy or anything like that. These things are not your concern as a meditator. If they happen, that's great. It's fantastic, but it's not your problem, it's not your worry. Your worry is to understand your own heart and to overcome the five hindrances and to find a sense of peace and contentment within yourself. These are the things that you can control, that you can have, so you can do something about. So when we're going along, we complete the first stage of metta and we come along to the second stage, then the crucial thing is that we adopt like a minimalist approach. We don't start thinking about that person. Okay? We don't send our mind over there to where that person is. If their person's in the same room or the same city or somewhere else on the planet or whatever, it doesn't matter. We don't go over there to where they are. It doesn't matter where they are. We're keeping that sense of awareness. Remember that the metta you want to develop is that nimitta, is that absorption in the whole body image of metta. You have that shape in your mind and you keep that awareness on that same shape in your mind of the whole body filled with metta. That's the important thing. So don't start thinking about that person. Okay, don't start reflecting about the person and contemplating them and what they did and so on and so forth. Don't try to imagine their face or an image or memory of that person. Just very, very minimal. Just putting their name into the words of metta. Okay? So for example, if you choose your father, then you would say, may my father be happy, may my father be happy. Whoever it is that you're going to choose. That's all. Now, those other things will happen from time to time. From time to time, you will start thinking about the person. From time to time, memories about times you spent with that person will arise. From time to time, the image or the face of that person will arise. It doesn't matter, that's okay. Just let them go and just keep your mind on the feeling of metta. Remember these two things. One is the words and the other is the feeling. Keeping those two things locked into place and unified as much as you can. And all the other stuff isn't important. Okay, just the name is enough to create an association in your mind. Okay, you don't have to worry about anything else. Just the name carries the association which triggers the appropriate emotional response in you. And that's what we're after. We're after a name that triggers a particular kind of emotional response. And then it's learning to deal with and assimilate that particular emotional response within the metta practice. This is what the task is at that stage. So when you're doing the metta, second person, doing it for the first person, then you change, introduce the second person, you keep on going, and then you just sustain the awareness exactly the same way. Only change one thing, which is the words of metta, put the second person's name in there. Everything else stays exactly the same. And then try to maintain that for a good period of time. 10 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour. And you will see whether there's any difference between that metta you're doing for the second person and what you did for the first person. You'll see whether there's any change or alteration. Perhaps it gets stronger. Sometimes when you do metta for the second person, there'll be more kind of excited, more overwhelming emotional responses, more rapture. Sometimes the feeling maybe go down, maybe the metta isn't as strong and the power of it will fall off. Sometimes you maybe get distracted into thinking about the person or memories or something like that. So all of these things can happen. Okay, so what you want to do ideally is keep it very even. So that the metta you've carried from the first person into the second person stays basically the same. The tone of the metta may change a little bit, okay? So you may get a very, very subtle shift in the tone, in the feeling tone of the metta. Very, very subtle shift. That's about all that might change. And then, ideally, you'd keep that feeling of metta going very evenly, flowing very evenly, and gradually getting stronger and deeper. Okay? So this is what we're looking for. We're looking for continuing that feeling of metta as smoothly, as uninterruptedly as possible. And the only change should be just like a gradual deepening as the metta becomes stronger. So if you can do that and do that relatively successfully, maintain the metta for a period of time and then you feel like you want to finish and come finish the meditation, then you should always, instead of finishing with the second person, you should always come back to the first person and then let the feeling of metta go from there. And this applies to every stage that you do. You should always go up sequentially, 1, 2, 3, 4, come back sequentially, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then finish from the first one and then go out. Okay? And so again, this is helping you to check and compare the different stages and your different kinds of emotional response at each stage. The further you go into the meditation, the more delicate and deeper your mind is, and the more you need to train it to gradually withdraw from the practice, okay? This is very important. You shouldn't violently rip your mind out of meditation. Mind's very delicate at that stage. It's easily hurt. So very gently, gradually withdraw it and bring it back into the senses, and so that you can come back into the world again, okay? And sort of make that transition as smooth as you possibly can. Okay, so in a minute let's try doing some metta for the second person, but just before we start that, do we have any questions about specifically about what I've been talking about this evening? Okay, and let's do it. So before we start, everyone think of one loved person to do metta for. Sitting peacefully. Bringing the mind into the body. leaving the mind focused in the heart. Bring up the words, may I be happy, may I be happy, may I be happy. Reminding oneself of the meaning of the words, a pure, wholesome aspiration for one's own true happiness and well-being. filling the body with the feeling of bliss, happiness and joy. Soaking through each part of the body, welling up in the heart. And then we can feel that metta evenly through the whole body. Keeping the image of the whole body in mind. And we introduce the second person. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. May that loved one be happy. Using their name inside the phrase of metta. Keeping the mind still and content, even and full. from second person back to the first person. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Letting the words of metta go, letting the feeling of metta fade away, allowing the mind to return to a neutral space, empty, open, clear. Only we can take mind view over how the meditation was, inquiring into cause and effect. What just happened? How did I use my mind? How did my mind respond to the meditation? How does my mind now compare with how it was at the start of the meditation? And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings rejoice in the merit that we've made through our practice. May all beings finally realize Nibbana. Are there any comments and questions? Happy birthday.